We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line.
Memories have been made.
Haliburton, a deep three for the lead.
Bam, baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits a three at the buzzer to win the game.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake shoots, and hits!
But this is Indiana.
Flips it down!
And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
What is going on, Pacer Nation? Welcome back to another episode here of your go-to Pacers podcast. And the Pacers get revenge on the Los Angeles Lakers, taking them down 109-90. Yeah, that's right, 90 points to the Lakers. And the Pacers secure their 42nd victory of the season, Fauci, meaning they will have a winning record for the first time since 2019-2020. Fauci, how we doing?
I'm doing great. You know, right before I watched this game, I opened up my freezer and took out a cold dish of revenge, because that is what we brought out to these Lakers. Alex, you were in the building, so I want to get to that in a second. But from watching, you know, from just on my couch, this was a performance you could be proud of. It felt like what a playoff game should have. Like, hey, you know what? You're probably not going to get it done scoring 145 points. You got to play some defense. And I think that that's one of the best defensive performances we've seen all season, if not the best. But tell me, what was it like in the building?
Yeah, it was electric. I mean, obviously, every single Lakers game is always going to be a Lakers-heavy crowd. And every LeBron James game is always a LeBron James. I mean, there's a lot of LeBron James fans out there. Like, even when he was on the Cavaliers, it was always that way. So I think that this is one of those things where it's like the Lakers plus LeBron just makes it feel like that much bigger. And it felt like more of a 60-40 Lakers fans in the arena last night. And you know what I'll say? Like, tickets were expensive. I don't blame season ticket holders for making a little bit of money by selling those tickets, because that helps them for the future put more money down for more season tickets for the next year. So I get that, you know, get the best bang for your buck. But it was really cool to see the Pacers obviously just kind of handle the Lakers defensively. It was a pretty close game the entire first half. You didn't really know which way it was going to go. But Indiana really put their foot down in that third quarter, that fourth quarter, and they held them to 90 points, Fauci, after giving up 150 on Sunday. So it's quite the turnaround. I mean, a 60-point differential, that's pretty wild.
No, it really is. I don't think that you could have asked for a better defensive effort. When you mentioned 60 points difference, it was 5 days later. So it's just like the Pacers, I think they've done a good job when you get to see a team twice in a short amount of span, whether it was either, you know, maybe it's a back-to-back or anything of the sort. I think the Pacers responded. It also felt like, you know, hey, we've said this before and same for the first time, they really got up for this game. Like something about playing the Lakers and LeBron, it was a big test for this team. A, we talked about how, you know, recently they just gave up 150, but this is also to the Lakers. But they also lost to the Lakers in the in-season tournament championship. So it felt like the Lakers were like that final boss, that obstacle that you needed to overcome to be able to say like, okay, who else do we need to get past to really prove it to ourselves that we do belong? And I felt like this was a time that the Pacers didn't have that high offense, you know, going. They didn't have the 120 plus points being scored. They were really able to kind of buckle down and make things tough for the Lakers. And I think that a couple key stats that really point out was the Lakers' inability to hit from three-point land. They went 5 of 30 in this game. That's good for 16%. Last time when we played the Lakers, they shot 48% from three. That's a huge difference. And then, Alex, whether it was a clean whistle, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, the free throw differential was barely even a differential. It was pretty much even in this game. The Lakers shot just 18 free throw attempts. They seemed almost not like the Lakers, like they could have been any other team compared to last time when the Lakers shot 43 free throws. Even if you want to say some of those might have been to fouling down the stretch, they still shot at least half of the amount of free throws than last game if you take out any late game fouling.
And I will say this game did still feel very physical. It wasn't like there was a lack of physicality in this game that didn't draw fouls, you know. So it felt like the officials let them play a little bit more. And I'm sure after the Pacers, you know, that game just brought up a huge conversation all over social media. You know, the Lakers still have been getting more free throws than their opponents after those games. But in this one, it felt like maybe they're going to try to right the ship a little bit, let them play a little bit more physical. But you're right. There's a lot of great things to look at here, but defensively, you know, this is the biggest thing. The Pacers were previously 0-18, Fauci, when they had scored less than 111 points. They scored less than 111 points, and they finally got a victory in one of those games. So that's a big sign right there for like, okay, they have improved the defense. But if you go back and look in the fourth quarter, after that Jalen Smith flagrant foul on Anthony Davis, it was like 90-83 with like 9 minutes left in the game. The Lakers scored 7 points in like 8 minutes and 47 seconds, the final fourth quarter. So that to me also, it's just like, you know what? That is a massive defensive stretch right there for the Pacers to kind of hold the Lakers off from any fourth quarter comeback to get that 19-point victory. I mean, it was just incredible to see how the Pacers jumped out, built that lead a little bit more once they put their starters back in. The bench did all they could from that third to the fourth, but they were getting tired. And, you know, it was just great to see the defense step up big there and really hold the Lakers to just around 7 points over 9 minutes.
It was great to see because I had that moment where I kind of like already started to count it as a win. The Pacers were up like 14 at the time. I was like, wow, this is an incredible win. And then all of a sudden I saw this kind of shrink down to maybe it was 7 or 9 points or something like that. It was single digits. And I remember being like, okay, anything could happen over here. But I think the Pacers really did buckle down and play a complete defensive showing. This wasn't just like one quarter they held the Lakers down. I mean, whether you want to go first quarter, 24 points they give up to the Lakers, that's a win. Last time in the first quarter it was 30 points, then just 25 in the second, 23 in the third, and just 18 in the fourth. Like you mentioned, there was that long stretch where the Lakers were just nowhere to be found. Last time when they played the Lakers, they gave up multiple 40-point quarters. So this was everything that you wanted to see, especially coming off of that letdown against Chicago. I just felt like you wanted to see, could the Pacers respond with only a handful of games left in the regular season? This felt like something you could build upon.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, you just talked about it there. You know, they scored 18 points in the fourth quarter. If you think about it this way, they scored 11 points in the first 3 minutes of that quarter. And that's why that lead went away so quick. And it's like they were getting hot offensively early on. to hold them just to 7 points, like I said, the last 9 minutes, like that just goes to show you, like, they scored more than what they scored the last 9 minutes in the first 3 minutes of that quarter. So it's one of those things where it's just like you never know where the scoring spurts are going to come from. Mm-hmm. But this was just one of those great defensive performances from the Pacers. And it started from, you know, top to bottom. And I felt like Tyrese Halliburton, Pascal Siakam, they were better defensively in this game than they have been in others. You know, I felt like early on Tyrese wasn't great defensively when I was watching him try to defend Austin Reeves or different players like that. I'm like, who is he going to guard out here?
Yeah.
But, you know, Austin Reeves, while he was shaking and baking a little bit, he wasn't converting a lot. So I think that it was great to see him, you know, have some big ooh and ah moments that the Laker fans were excited for, but it really didn't result in a whole lot. And I think that was huge for the Pacers, just trying to like maintain that Lakers crowd too, you know, because it was very Lakers heavy. And I think you got to make sure you don't let them get out of control and kind of run the building wild.
Yeah, when you're talking about Tyrese defensively, one key play stood out to me. Halliburton gets switched on to LeBron, and LeBron's trying to back him down. And me and probably every other Pacer fan, and definitely the Lakers, probably started going, oh, man, get LeBron the ball. And then for Pacer fans, they're probably saying, okay, this get Halliburton out. We got to do a switch. And Halliburton anticipated the pass, poked it loose. At this point, it was 92-85, 7-point game. When Halliburton gets that steal, which led to a fast break basket, the Pacers went on a 12-0 run. During that time, that defensive play by Halliburton was a big play in this game that ended up, you know, kind of really killing the momentum for the Lakers. And I felt like that was great. And that was something that I just didn't anticipate, because you knew LeBron wanted to back him down. But Tyrese was ready for that, and that just kind of shows some of that defensive growth. He's always been good at you know, poking the ball loose, getting steals. But to do that on LeBron, a guy that you're giving up a lot of size to, very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, Tyrese Halliburton's a very smart player. So he's really good at poking balls loose and getting his hands in the lanes and things like that. It's just the on-ball defense that's not great for him. And sometimes even the off-ball defense can be a little bit tough for him when he's trying to, you know, chase a guy. But when he's able to kind of play almost safety, like free safety out there, that's when he's at his best. But he did have some nice moments here and there defensively, and it's good to see him kind of continue to grow on that end, because you can tell there's just a much more there's a bigger effort there to put, you know, his best foot forward defensively. So that's what you like to see from Tyrese. But let's kind of move on here to Halliburton and Siakam and just what they did offensively to Vachi, because they were so good in this game. They really carried the team, 43 of their 109 points, you know, nearly half their points came from their big two. Siakam, 16 of his 22 in the second half, and Halliburton, 14 of his 21 were in the second half. Those two guys, really, they were not super present in the first half offensively, but you really felt them put their foot down in that third and fourth quarter and just kind of say, okay, enough's enough. We're going to take this team, put them on our back, and get this victory.
And this is the two-man duo that has to get it done for the Pacers. Like we talked about the other night against Chicago, Andrew Nembhard led the Pacers in points. That's probably not going to come in a win. It's not. You need your star players to be stars. And, yeah, the second half was huge for that. First half, I had a lot of questions. McConnell led us in points with 11, and you kind of wonder, okay, who's going to step up? What's it going to be? And Halliburton, he had some struggles last time against the Lakers, just 12 points. So to see him go for 21, 8, and 8, awesome stuff. I mean, look, it's not like we're going to say that the Halliburton rebounding was a major difference in this game, but I shared our record when Halliburton has 7 or more rebounds. I believe the Pacers are undefeated this year. So, hey, it always helps that when he's crashing the glass, but great to see. But for Siakam, that's a guy that had his fingerprints all over this game. He killed the Lakers last time. So it made sense to continue to get him the rock, and I felt that that was a big difference in that third quarter where the Pacers outscored the Lakers by 9, and I feel like that's really where Siakam did a lot of his damage, had 10 points in that third quarter.
Yeah, he was great. I mean, honestly, it was great to see Siakam just kind of figure things out, and he was 0 of 0 from 3, so he wasn't taking any shots from the outside. It was all inside the paint. And there was quite a few looks that he had that just the ball didn't roll in. And some were a little bit out of control, but there was, you know, a good majority that were just right there at the rim that he just, you know, put the wrong spin on the ball or something like that, attacking the glass. And it's like, okay, you live with that. I mean, because Siakam does such a great job of, you know, scoring the basketball in different ways. And there was one where LeBron went to I think it was in the second quarter maybe. LeBron went to, like, take a charge, and Siakam just sidestepped him and made the layup, and they called the blocking foul, and LeBron even just like admitted that he did it. It was so funny. Like, he actually raised his hand. He was like, that was on me. And so it's like, you know, that's not very often that you see LeBron James admit when he fouls. I mean, usually because he's complaining about every call in the league, right? So it was just kind of cool to see Siakam just be able to outsmart LeBron on that play there, because LeBron was really anticipating a charge. And I thought, is 40-year-old LeBron James about to take a charge here on Pascal Siakam? He was trying to, but he just wasn't in the right position. So,
yeah.
Well, I would have been interesting to see what would have happened if they would have had made straight up contact. I mean, that would have been funny to see.
I know, but there's still that moment, because in that exact play, it's like, I get it, LeBron's, you know, nearly 40 years old, but like, we've watched so much basketball that you feel that you kind of feel like LeBron's going to get the stop. You know, you don't know whether it's going to be what, hey, he's going to block it at the rim or whatever, but like, it is an older LeBron. And I think that it was great to see Siakam, you know, be able to score on that. And it just shows that, hey, no matter how old LeBron is, there's still that mystery of like, hey, he could get this stop right now. So always impressive anytime you can score on LeBron or anytime you could stop LeBron. I know we'll get into a little bit of the stop on LeBron later, but I just feel for Siakam and Haliburton, they had to set the tone in that second half. If you wanted to be for real, those two players had to get it going. And I feel that for Haliburton, good to see, just overall 7 of 15 from the field. You know, 3 of 8 from three. It's close to 40% or so. Good to see him being, you know, a more than capable 3-point shooter again. And Haliburton was a plus 27 in this game to lead all players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 21-8-8. I mean, just another good game from Tyrese. And, you know, I think Dustin Dopierak tweeted out, he's like, can we say the slump's over? And it's like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like a game-to-game basis with Tyrese. You know what I mean? Like, I think you can say the slump is over, but I think you can say that he's still inconsistent with his shot and figuring things out. And, you know, he had some good looks on that, but he was really, you know, I mean, if you take away the half court heave that he had at the end of the first or the second quarter, then maybe the 3-point percentage looks a little bit better then, right?
It does.
3 of 7, right? So 3 of 7 on actual attempts.
Exactly. So you live with that and you love it. So yeah, that, I mean, that was definitely a heave that had a very low chance of going in, but he's now scored 20 points in 4 of his last 6 games. So it really does feel that it's way different than, you know, maybe earlier in the month of March where the struggles were real. So he's now scored 20 or more 31 times this year. Hey, this is the first time in the NBA that he's had a winning record. So it's cool to see. We got to continue to build on it. But for tonight, I think that Tyrese's scoring ability and everything he brought to the game was a big difference compared to last time when the Pacers scored 145, but he only had 12 of them. So great to see those two players get it going in the second half.
Yeah, and I do want to say this too, because the last time I was at Gainbridge Fieldhouse was the Pacers' last home game against the Cleveland Cavaliers. And that's when we got that Tyrese Haliburton quote about, you know, how this sucks and how he's just been terrible and going through a slump and whatever. Never, like, the worst slump he's gone through in his life. And tonight, after the game against the Lakers, I mean, the guy was all smiles. It was great because everyone thought the questions were over, but there was another person that was about to ask a question. And our PR guy, Mike Preston, was like, all right, thanks, everybody. And then this guy's like, oh, I had one. And Ty was like, come on, Mike, what are you doing? You know, like, we got another question here. And you could just tell Ty was in such a different state of mind. So good to see him kind of shake that rust off a little bit. Love to see that because, you know, we all love Tyrese Haliburton, obviously great player, but we want to see him happy. And when he's happy, that's when he plays better. He just plays with that joy on the court. Mm-hmm. And it felt like you really weren't seeing that for a stretch this year. So it's good to see him kind of get that joy back. We'll see if he can continue to build upon this. They've got 2 games up against the Nets, the next 2 games. So maybe that's a little bit of a momentum booster there, playing a team that's not the greatest, but I think they might have won 3 in a row now if they won last night. So that's one of their longest winning streaks they've had. So they're playing their best basketball since the All-Star break.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Let's go ahead and take a quick break and talk about Unified Healing. You know, whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of Setting the Pace. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or simpler, EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in Indiana or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/pace to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/pace, P-A-C-E. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System. Now, let's get back to the show.
Another player that I think that we really, in this game, have to give, you know, we have to tip our hat to, you know, is, you know, TJ McConnell. It's not just necessarily this game. It's lately. Like, McConnell right now is on one of the best stretches of his career. And I feel like when you look at the bench for the Pacers in this game, you know, there's not a lot to write home about. But I feel that TJ McConnell now, this is the ninth time in a row he scored in double figures. He had 16 points to lead the bench on 7 of 11 shooting. I mentioned earlier, he led the Pacers in points in the first half with 11. I mean, he's doing this, and he did it in 19 minutes. Alex, I mean, what can we say about TJ McConnell lately and just the consistency that he's had? Because dare I say, he's been the most consistent Pacer for quite some time now.
Here's what I was thinking about today. I was rewatching the game this morning, Fachi, before we did this podcast, and it made me laugh because Anthony Davis was switched on to TJ McConnell and he gave him like 20 feet of space to shoot the three. And Quinn Buckner said, "Oh yeah, they're playing truth or dare with him." And that's the truth right there. And I just started laughing. I'm like, okay, QB, like that's so funny. They're daring him to shoot it. And he said, "Ah, truth. I just made it." So I enjoyed that little commentary there from QB, but I will say this, the three-point shot has improved.
But what I was really thinking about is, have we seen TJ McConnell take a step forward in his game in terms of like development? Is he getting better at age 31 than what he was just 2 years ago? It's really weird to think about a guy that's already in the middle of his prime saying he's gotten better, but I think he has. And I think and I honestly feel like this is one of those weird situations because he was out of the rotation. We talked about that a lot. I kind of think that that motivated him a little bit more to just lock in and figure out, okay, I don't want them to ever doubt that I should be in the rotation again or not. And so I think that he's elevated his game to a spot that we have not ever seen it before with him as a Pacer, because he just looks like a totally different player. You know, really the last 10, 15 games, it just feels like he is on a different level than what he once was.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, look, we mentioned it before that it's just weird that he wasn't supposed to be in the rotation. He's averaging a career high. The 9.7 points per game, it's one full point ahead of his career high that he averaged last year, and he's doing it in less minutes. He's playing 18 minutes per night. That is a career low. He's scoring a career high. He's shooting 55% from the field. It's like, and he, and look, and the 3-point attempts, I know there's not a lot, but he's shooting 38% from three on the year. He picks and chooses. He knows when to do it. The assist to turnover ratio is great. I mean, it's 5.3 assists to just 1.5 turnovers. I mean, great ratio. I feel that McConnell right now, that probably did light a fire under him, because it wasn't that it was that his play had slipped or it was not as good as he used to. It was just, hey, we got some younger players ahead of you that we really want to emphasize and give more playing time to. And he showed just, hey, year in year, he's had to scratch and claw for everything that he's ever gotten. And you look at the guards that started on this team at the beginning of the season, you look at the guards that are here now. And the one thing that stayed is TJ McConnell managed to beat them out. The Bruce Browns or the Buddy Hield or anyone else that the Pacers have elected to move on from, it's like he's carved out his role that it would be a crime now for McConnell to not be in the game, because the Pacers need him in the game. And I think that that's something that has just been amazing. We're happy to have. And I think that the league respects TJ McConnell. We start to hear random players from time to time talk about how he's either their favorite player or someone that they don't want to match up against, or it's like that respect is there. And I couldn't be happier for a guy like TJ that had every opportunity to potentially sulk or ask for a trade, and none of the above happened in the beginning of the year.
Yeah, when they were asking Darvin Ham pregame, like, how do you go about, you know, stopping this Pacers team? You know, he kind of went through some of the starters, obviously Halliburton, Siakam, but then he said, we got to really contain TJ McConnell with the second unit. And so when you hear a coach talk about TJ McConnell and what he makes or what he brings to this Pacers team and the importance that he plays, the important role that he plays on this team, it's kind of interesting just to hear it from a different perspective, because when you watch the Pacers, you know they're going to play fast. You know, Halliburton, Siakam, Turner, Nesmith, like those kind of guys are going to go out there and put their foot down and really play good on both sides of the basketball and that kind of thing. You know, this is your starting five, whatever. Like, they're really good. But, like, nobody expects the 6-foot white point guard to come in here and just completely change the game. And not only change the game, but carry the second unit. Because one thing that we've talked about is, like, how are they going to fill the void of Benedict Mathurin not being in the game? Who's going to put the ball in the basket? Are they going to go, you know, play the Siakam minutes? And we even saw last night, like, they decided, you know what, we're not going to play Siakam with the second unit. They brought Aaron Nesmith back. They put Doug McDermott on the bench. I think McDermott maybe played like 2 minutes in this game.
Yeah.
And so they go back to Nesmith to match the LeBron minutes. And then I think they ended up putting Turner back in for Jalen Smith. But it was never like, okay, Siakam, you're the offensive focal point. It was like, okay, here's what we're going to do. And it's all in TJ McConnell's hands at this point, because Ben Shepherd's not running offense for himself. Nesmith will never run offense for himself. Obi Toppin won't run offense for himself, and neither will Jalen Smith. So it's all predicated upon what can TJ McConnell do. Now, if TJ McConnell has a bad game, then I think the bench overall is going to have a bad game, just because you definitely need TJ McConnell to be good at getting into the paint, which he is great at. I mean, Caitlin Cooper said it on the podcast Friday that between him and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, they're the top two in, you know, getting into the paint and drives to the paint, and he's number one, where SGA is number two. So, you know, per 100 possessions, I think is what it was.
Yeah.
So it's just really interesting to see what he's able to do and how, you know, impactful he can be. But, like, when he's scoring the way that he's scoring, it just opens up the floor for everybody, because now when he's driving, it draws defenders away a little bit. He's still not going to be the outside threat that you want him to be, but if he can shoot the ball wide open and make the three, or at least be semi of a threat, you know, that to me is like, okay, that's improvement. So I've just been really impressed with TJ McConnell, because you know what he's going to do on a night-to-night basis. You know exactly who he is as a player, and you still can't stop him. And that, to me, just speaks volumes to, okay, you know what? He knows who he is, and he knows how to attack defenses, and he does it on a consistent basis. Sure, there are some times where I hate the shot attempts that he takes.
Yeah.
A little bit rushed early in the shot clock, over dribbles, shoots fadeaways over guys taller than him, and he airballs him. But you know what? You live with two or three of those if he hits the big ones when you're trying to get that offense going with that second unit. So I really felt like he feels more and more like the big X factor for this team moving forward.
I think he is. And I think that now it's like, we didn't think that early in the season we'd be in a spot, but like, as we head into April, if there was a situation that TJ McConnell was unable to play in a playoff game or anything like that, we would be worried. Mm-hmm. We would, because we would wonder about that bench unit. He scored about half the bench points in this past game. And just kind of looking at his month over month, you know, in the beginning of the season, he averaged 6.8 points in the month of November. So you're like, okay, yeah, whatever. Then it's in the month of December, 7.8. And first, in both those months, he's over 50% from the field. Then the following in January, 9 points per game on 53% shooting from the field. All right. Then the following month, 10 points per game on 59% shooting from the field. And then now brings us into March. He's averaging just under 14 points per game on 56% from the field. And while limited attempts, 56% from three. So month over month, he's giving you more points per game on a little bit more efficiency. And it's just, he's someone that is really ramping up at the right time, playing his best basketball when the Pacers really don't have an option for him to not be at the top of his game. When you mentioned with no Benedict Mathurin and the inconsistencies of a Ben Shepherd, where, hey, when you get 10 or more from him, hey, it's awesome, but you just can't count on it. And then Obi Toppin, you know that you've seen these good flashes, but you still can't count on Obi on a night-to-night basis. TJ McConnell has been someone the Pacers can count on, need to count on, and hey, we're fortunate that he's been reliable.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of someone that has been reliable for the Pacers, another guy that was reliable last night, he played 39 minutes and only had one foul. That is Aaron Nesmith, and his job was to guard and harass the heck out of LeBron James, and that's not an easy task to do, but Rick Carlisle said it best.
Yeah.
He is our best defender on the wing, and so Aaron Nesmith is a guy that they really need, and if he can continue to grow, I mean, my goodness, Fauci, like, only one foul in 39 minutes guarding LeBron James.
Crazy.
It's pretty wild to think, because we know Nesmith is one that usually gets into foul trouble, so big-time growth from him for this game specifically.
Yeah, and I got a couple quotes, but, you know, Carlisle said, Aaron carries the flag when it comes to guarding guys like LeBron James, the body type. We had nobody else. It speaks to his maturity. It speaks to how he's adjusted his game to fit the way the game is being officiated now. He puts his body in there. He shows his hands, and he's making it tough, and he just keeps coming. And I felt like even the baskets that LeBron did score on, Nesmith was playing perfect defense, and then maybe LeBron was able to kind of fade away into you know, a couple tough shots. But to put things in perspective, when you look at this, LeBron James, some say the GOAT, had 16 points on just 12 shots. And I thought to myself, whoa, when was the last time LeBron had 16 or just 12 shots? You have to date back to January 11th of this season. And then other than that, it's pretty much the lowest shot total and scoring total that he's had all season. And I felt like Aaron Nesmith was a major part of that and this win of being able to hold LeBron in check.
He really was. I mean, he was so good in this game, and he did a lot of little things, Fauci. There was a play there in the third quarter. The Pacers had got off to a little bit of a hot start in the third quarter, and the Lakers punched them back. And I think it was around a 4-point game, and Aaron Nesmith hit this huge three to just give them a lift to make it a 7-point game, and it felt like the Pacers really just kind of held on to that ever since. And it felt like, you know, because there was like three possessions in a row where they missed shots, but Aaron Nesmith finally hit a three and just kind of, okay, gave the, you know, kept the ball in. Obviously, he's only shooting 2 of 7 from three, which is not great, right? You want to see him continue to get better at that, but like, It's just one of those things where when you look at Aaron Nesmith, you know exactly defensively that he's going to give it all that he has, and he's going to work to figure things out. But like the 7 points that he got in the first quarter really set the tone for this team. Yep. Early on, because we talked about it, Siakam, Haliburton, they really carried it in the second half, mm-hmm. but it was Nesmith that kind of got this offense going in the first quarter. So, you know, I want to give him a shout out there because that was just, he didn't have a lot of points, but he did score in that little spurt there at the beginning to get them going, hit a big three, had a nice dunk in transition that the crowd got excited about. So, you know, Aaron Nesmith is an energy guy, and I think people feed off that energy. So he's fearless when it comes to doing whatever is asked of him. And that even means guarding the best player in the league, or one of the best players in the league, in LeBron James. Like, he's usually guarding the best player on a night-to-night basis, whether it's him or Nembhard. I mean, you know, the Pacers, they're not the greatest defensive team. We know that. But they're making strides, and these two guys are kind of the head of the snake there with Miles Turner as well.
Yeah, I think that Nesmith is like a classic example of truly excelling in your role. Like, I feel that he's asked to do probably more than he should have to, but I feel that he always gives the Pacers everything they got. And for a team that struggled with their defensive capabilities for most of the season, I feel like he's been that bright spot that's just brought it every single night. And every team needs one or maybe even three Aaron Nesmiths on that roster to be able to, you know, really take on that dirty work. Because let's be honest, I mean, who are the Pacers going to throw at LeBron if Nesmith wasn't really able to do it all the time? You could try some Siakam, you could try some Obi Toppin, but you might not like the results that much. I think that when you put Aaron Nesmith on him, and, you know, this game, it really, really worked out. And I think that was awesome to see. It gives you a lot of hope for what could happen in the playoffs or whomever we draw. But I feel that Aaron Nesmith was definitely deserving of his flowers tonight.
Absolutely, Fachi. Well, let's close this one out here because there was some stuff we wanted to talk about. Just give a little love. First and foremost, the Pacers honored Miles Turner last night before the game for breaking the franchise record. And Kevin Pritchard gave him this cool little memoir, whatever you call it. I don't know what you say that word is there. But he gave him some little
plaque.
It wasn't even really a plaque. It was almost like a big cutout of like a bunch of pictures put together, like a collage of something. I don't know.
Yeah,
whatever you want to call it. It's early. I can't think of the right word, Fachi.
I'm out of coffee. I looked at it. It was terrible. No coffee in the whole entire house. Out. Couldn't believe it.
I had coffee, but I didn't have any. We have coffee, though. I had some water. Anyway, they presented
out here. You know, on this early episode. So I'm moving slow, you're moving slow. But the thing is there's still enough momentum off of this win against the Lakers to push us forward.
Absolutely. Well, anyway, congrats, Miles Turner. Got a little cool something to take home, memorabilia, whatever you want to call it. But anyway, I'm gonna move off of this word. I can't figure it out. Chris Denary. We love Chris Denary. Chris Denary has been a huge, huge, huge supporter of this podcast. I know he listens to quite a few of our episodes, even though we're putting out a lot more content now. Hard to keep up with, and Chris is a very busy man. But his 2000th telecast for Pacer Sports Entertainment was last night. And what a way to get your 2000th episode, your 2000th telecast done by getting a huge win over LeBron James, a guy that's been a thorn in the side of the Pacers for a while. But just congratulations to him. That includes fever games and things like that. I tried giving him a call last night just to wish him, you know, congratulations, but he was out celebrating with his son. So I'm happy for him for being able to do that. But we love Chris Denary. Chris Denary is just a great, great guy. Obviously did our intro for us here on the podcast too. So CD, we love you, man, if you're listening to this, and congratulations once again. I think it's great that you have been here so long for the Pacers, and it feels like you are a part of Pacers basketball.
Major shout out to Chris. We are so lucky to have him calling Pacer games because he does such a great job. And truly, I mean, for those of you that ever that have NBA League Pass, if the Pacers are in an away game, it'll like automatically set you on the opposing announcers. No knock on them, but they ain't Chris. I'll tell you that. I changed that to the Pacers broadcast in record time every time. Chris is one of the best in the business and is such a class act. I mean, truly someone that if I ever go to a Pacers game, I always try and meet up with Chris, and he is always, you know, receptive to it. Just one of the best guys in the business. Couldn't be happier for him. Congrats on your 2000th game called.
Absolutely, Chris. We love you, man. Last thing here, Fachi, this was as Chris Inari pointed out, because he is a stats guy, and we love a good stat from Chris Inari.
Yeah.
This was the 100th meeting between the Pacers and the Lakers in the regular season, Fauci. So I don't want to know what that record is overall.
Neither do I. I don't. I just want to know what the last one was. We won that one.
Want to know, baby.
Yeah.
That's that. So anyways, we're going to close this one out. Fauci, tell everybody where they can find us at on social media.
Absolutely. So you can find us on Twitter at PacersPodSTP. You can find Alex on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA. I can be found on Twitter at _FACCI. You can find us on Instagram at PacersPodSTP. You can find us on Facebook, Setting the Pace. You can find us on TikTok, Setting the Pace. And Alex, tell them where they can check us out on YouTube.
Yeah, you can go to youtube.com/settingthepace, a Pacers podcast. Please like, subscribe, let us know what you think in the comment section below. We always appreciate the feedback. But if you haven't, go to our audio platform, whether that's Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple, wherever you get it. And please subscribe to that and leave us a 5-star rating and review. We definitely want to continue to get more of those as it helps more people find this podcast. But thank you all so much for tuning in. And what a great game by the Indiana Pacers, Fauci. It was a lot of fun to see LeBron James, Anthony Davis go down finally after the Pacers had really struggled with them the first two matchups they had this year with them. So big time win for the Pacers as they hold on to the 6th seed. The Magic lost last night, and so did the 76ers, and so did the Knicks. So it's all jumbled up right now. 7 games left, a lot to be determined still. But Fauci, if you're hoping the Pacers can build off this win and take down the Nets on Monday night, then hit me with those 3 words.
Let's go, Pacers!